Okay, welcome everyone. This is a Mises Academy lecture on human action, the introduction of human action by Ludwig von Mises. This is the first lecture for a series of courses, lectures on human action part one, the very first part, which is called Human Action, the same name as the book. And this will be the first of a series of courses that will cover the entire book. And this course is taught by David Gordon, and these slides are prepared by David Gordon. And David Gordon is indisposed at the moment, so I will be lecturing on this. And my name is Danny Sanchez, and I'm going to pause the recorder just so that I can help people who are having audio-video problems. So our first slide that David prepared is economics as a new science. Mises says that economics is the newest science. So what he meant by that, he talked about that there were so many different sciences that basically evolved out of the studies of the ancient Greeks. And economics is the newest of these, but really it developed beginning in earnest, beginning in the 18th century with Richard Cantillon and what other people think more famously, Adam Smith. Now, he asks, is this true? Haven't there been many newer sciences than economics, for example, neurobiology or astrophysics? And David clarifies that these sciences were just developments of already existing science. Economics had a new method. So these natural sciences were just evolved out of the approach that were taken to the natural sciences before, ever since the days of Galileo and Kepler. It was just an evolution of that. Whereas economics was just a completely different approach. And what Mises said, what Mises says in Human Action that is so phenomenal about this approach is that it was a discovery of regularity in the realm of human events. Deep thinkers had already discovered regularity in the realm of natural events, like Kepler's laws and Newton's laws and what Galileo discovered, there were these laws, these invariable laws that govern change in the physical universe that natural philosophers discovered. And what the moral philosophers, social sciences was called moral philosophy at the beginning, discovered was, especially the economists, starting with the economists, they discovered that there is also regularity in the concatenation of events in the human realm. That there, that prices, for example, aren't just arbitrary numbers that people tag on things. That there are causal mechanisms, which causal laws that govern how prices form on the market. That you could learn through economics. But it was a completely new method that people, that economists used that was different from the methods that the natural sciences used. It wasn't a method really of just observing things and seeing regularities in historical events, in things that transpired before us. Whether through experiments or whether observing the stars, it was something that was discovered through deduction, really, through discursive reasoning, Mises says. So this was a completely new method under the sun. Now, more on method. Issues of method are extremely important for Mises. If someone says we don't have to go over difficult methodological issues, he isn't being true to the spirit of human action. Now, Mises quotes Spinoza on this topic. He quotes where Spinoza said, like, let light be the delineation of itself as it is for darkness. In other words, it's let truth speak for itself. And so he said that it's easy to just take that approach, to just let truth speak for itself and not get too caught up in these methodological battles. But he said that, no, that's unacceptable, that you really have to just dive into these methodological issues and figure them out if you're going to really advance the science of economics. So he says that this is not, methodology is not just an issue for pedants, that it's an issue that needs to be worked out by economists themselves. So that's a very important point that he makes. Next, what Mises considers the wrong approach. Excuse me, I'm getting a call, and I hope it's about David, so I'm going to pause the record. Okay, now we have a question. Daniel Wade asks, what did he say about regularity in the realm of human events? Well, that he said that the economists first discovered regularity in the realm of human events, and what I said about, you know, price formation, also about interest rates, about how production is guided, how factors of production are allocated, that there are regularities here, that it's not just, oh, this happened, and that's all you can say about it. There are laws that govern how these things happen, so a sort of regularity. And this has to be distinguished distinguished from a certain sense of the word regularity, because the distinguishing mark of human events is that there isn't uniform regularity in the sequence of events. That when just because one thing under certain circumstances happened in the past, it doesn't mean that they're going to happen again in the future. And that's basically what natural philosophy, natural sciences are based on, is this method of reasoning that if everything's controlled and you have something that happens in the past, that under those same circumstances they will happen again in the future. But there's no regularity in human events. The same person who acts a certain way in one situation, that there's it's so complex that you could never really duplicate that situation again, and that he may in a similar situation he may choose entirely differently. So there's no uniform regularity, but there is regularity after a sense in that you can discern causal, you can discern laws that govern how prices form and how production is guided and how factors of production are allocated. So there we go. And while we're still waiting, I may as well just go on. Now, there have been attempts to say that history as a whole has a certain goal or direction. These are wrong because they depend on the view that that a collective entity, history, or the nation, has goals. As we'll see, a fundamental principle of praxeology is methodological individualism. Only particular people act. So for example, some German philosophers thought that history could actually, act, that there was a guiding guiding power of history that was just determining, how things went. And a lot of this stemmed from Hegel's view of philosophy. And so that is in direct contrast to methodological individualism where only particular people act, and that nations don't really act. That when we say, oh, this country executed this person, no, the country didn't really execute the person. The executioner executed the person, and that it's our understanding about the meaning of the person's action that makes us interpret that as an act of the nation. But really, it's the individual who acts. Next slide. Economics versus moralism. One of the greatest obstacles to economics is the view that what happens in society is completely up to us. The idea that there are limits to what we can do is distasteful to many social reformers. So especially people in government, they hate the idea of there being an economic law. I mean, people like Napoleon and Alexander the Great, you know, they have such huge egos and they have such huge ambitions that the idea of there being, you know, laws that you can't just like willy-nilly create wealth by expanding the money supply, for example, or that you can't just you can't just set price controls and not have adverse effects from that, that they don't like that. They don't like to hear that. And so Murray Rothbard said that the role of the economist was often to be the wet blanket to those who are in power by showing that there are restrictions and there are, you know, consequences that will happen based on what you do that you can't necessarily, you know, control. Because economics teaches that there are definite laws that limit what we can do, many people dismiss economics. For example, many people don't like the idea that minimum wage laws cause unemployment. So again, that's exactly what I just said. Okay, modified rejection. Some people don't reject economics altogether. Instead, they say that economics only applies to the money-making aspect of life. It deals with homo economicus, economic man. It is just part of what we need to consider in studying human beings. And so this was sort of an effect of older economics, classical economics. They didn't have a good theory of value. With their theory of value, it sort of cut the consumer out of the picture. It only focused on the producer. And so they have this idea that this implication that economics was only about that it posited man as someone who was only concerned with profit and loss. That posited that someone was basically a businessman and that all they cared about was money returns. And what was so momentous about the marginal revolution, which was the time in the history of economic thought where in the 1870s, Karl Menger and two other famous economists figured out the marginal theory of value, that they were able to integrate the consumer into this too. That was a big problem with this homo economicus. And it's still something that people make these straw man arguments that what economists are just talking about is this fictional person who is only concerned with money making. But no, praxeology, the science of human action, which is what Mises calls economics as a branch of, deals with every action, whether it's altruistic action, whether it's giving to charity, whether it's Robinson Crusoe alone on his island. It deals with all action. So this is the response to the modified rejection. 19th century economics didn't have the resources to counter the modified rejection view. It couldn't do so because it had a cost of production theory of value. This theory, so instead, this is instead of the marginal theory of value that, the marginal subjective theory of value that I mentioned before. This theory didn't deal with all choices that people make. Thus, it couldn't counter the objection that economics deals with only one aspect of life. So, yeah, basically what I just said. So Marx says, but Mises was opposed to expressing these regularities or economic laws as functions of variables that can be quantified. From the intro, it is not clear to me yet why he rejected the physics and natural science model so vehemently. That's true. He did say that these regularities cannot be qualified because the, as functions of variables, the reason why you can't have that is because with human action, everything is variables. There's no constants in human action, and you can't create meaningful functions with only variables. You have to have constants in order to have a meaningful function, and there are simply no constants in human action. Okay, so next slide. So yes, this is the subjective theory of value that I was talking about. In order to, Andrew says that was a good way of putting it. Thank you, Andrew. In order to counter the objection, we need to have a theory of value that explains all choices, not just business choices, all choices in human life. Only a subjective value theory of value can do this. To develop a subjective theory of value, we need to use the proper method. This is one reason methodological issues are so important. The proper method is also important in understanding economic calculation. So, for example, with a cost of production theory of value, if you were to try to explain an action based on its cost of production, the way the classical economists used to try to explain a price was based on its cost of production. So if if wine was really valuable, then they would explain that by saying that, well, the land that was used to make the wine, that was really valuable, and so that imputed value onto the final product. The way Austrians explain it is the exact opposite, that the land is valuable because people want the end product. They want the wine. They value the wine itself. Now it's wrong to explain it the classical way, but it's at least feasible. But if you're trying to use the cost of production to explain non-industrial material production type things, giving your mom a hug or something like that, like how do you even use the cost of production theory of value to explain that? That you have to completely separate that with the old way of looking at economics. But with the subjective theory of value, all you have to say is you value expressing affection to your mother, and that is why you gave them a hug. That it explains all action. Okay. And going back to the conversation that's going on here, Daniel says, yeah, a function is a construct whereby if you put x in, you always get y. It's not a function. If you put x in, and you suddenly get z, except for the random function. Okay, so yeah, that's fine. Praxeology, Mises says that he is dealing with a general science of human action that he calls praxeology. Catalactics is the study of exchange, and this is part of praxeology. So praxeology is the study of human action, any and all human action, and human action as such. Not particular human actions, not like Caesar crossing the Rubicon, That's history. That's not praxeology, even though it is a human action. It's human action as such. It's just the general theory of laws of human action, immutable laws of human action. Now, catalactics is the study of exchange as part of praxeology. So people exchanging commodities for money, that is part of catalactics. And Megan, could you type the reminder of how people can get audio about going to the communicate menu and everything? Steve says, David's here. Hi, David. I will make you a presenter now.
Okay, now,
Hi, David.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I'll just start my video.
That's okay.